It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, waited until the very end to deliver its most hotly anticipated decision of the term. In a 5-4 decision, the High Court ruled that for-profit companies can use religious objections to avoid paying for contraception coverage required under the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Well, River to River listeners, are you cheering or jeering the latest U.S. Supreme Court decision in this Hobby Lobby case, as it's come to be known? Do you think employers should have the ability to limit coverage for contraception based on religious beliefs? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or put something on our Facebook, post something, your opinion, your question on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Joining us to discuss this contentious ruling in the first half hour, Scott Peters is with us in our Iowa City studio, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Welcome back, Scott.
Thank you, Ben.
Mark Kendi is with us, Professor of Law at Drake University. He's the James Madison Chair in Constitutional Law, Director of the Drake Constitutional Law Center. Mark Kendi, welcome to you.
Thanks a lot.
Let's turn to you, Mark. We have a legal perspective from you and the political perspective, more or less, from Scott. Give us a few more details, significant key details on this decision and its significance.
It's a pretty broad decision, I think, although there are some who disagree with that. But I think overall it's pretty broad. They basically say that a corporation does have religious rights, which is, I think, an extension of the law. There's a little precedent, I think, for that decision. It's a very significant one. They say that that basically the family that owned Hobby Lobby and another company are substantially burdened by the contraception mandate, and that's, of course, something that's disputed. And then, you know, they say the government could have done this differently. And so overall, it's quite a victory for the Hobby Lobby side, and thus and has some other language that I think is really broad.
Mm-hmm. Justice Samuel Alito led the court's Republican appointees, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg leading the liberals, including the two other female justices in a defense of that. Let me get your first impression, Scott Peters, about the significance of this decision.
It's clearly a significant decision in terms of some of the things that Mark pointed out, in terms of explicitly stating the protection for corporations and in terms of the interpretation here of the scope of the Affordable Care Act and the ability to mandate contraceptive coverage. I think at this point, the big question going forward is probably going to be whether the court in the future and whether appellate courts that are going to be hearing other lawsuits, whether they abide by the limitations that the Supreme Court claimed to have put on this particular mm-hmm. decision.
Do you have reason to believe when we look back at case history that so-called limited decisions do not in effect end up being limited when we look at them decades past?
They definitely that can definitely happen. If you look at Lawrence versus Texas, for example, in 2003, in that case, the Supreme Court ruled that anti-sodomy statutes violated the due process liberty rights of people, particularly of gay people. And the court in that decision said very clearly, this doesn't have to do with gay marriage or anything else. It only has to do with anti-sodomy statutes. Well, in 2013, of course, in the Windsor case of last year, the Supreme Court overturned federal law. It said that the federal government had to recognize same-sex marriages in the states, partly based on that Lawrence versus Texas decision. And so when I see a case like this case, the Hobby Lobby case, where the Supreme Court says this only applies to this particular type of contraceptive coverage, it only applies to closely held corporations, it won't apply to vaccinations, it won't apply to blood transfusions, that's all well and good, and it could end up being true. The justices could end up sticking to that, but they also might not. I think sometimes they are either not too good at seeing the future, or perhaps in some cases maybe a little bit disingenuous about how a precedent is going to be used in the future.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me, Mark Kendi, like this is some are interpreting this as a thin end of a wedge, if it's interpreted that way, where you could say it's the ruling is very limited for now until we as a court decide it's not limited.
Right. That's standard language by the court. They'll often say, you know, something about, and I think Justice Alito uses this term, this is a very specific decision. It involves these particular facts. And then he mentions some other things that he says, well, it doesn't involve them. But he doesn't rule them out. He doesn't say, you know, and that's sort of not their job in this case anyway, to rule out other issues as being something that they're going to decide in this case. And Justice Ginsburg in her dissent gives the list of issues that Scott did a nice job of mentioning, as well as, you know, another big issue which might be out there, which is exemptions for companies or entities that don't want to do business with, let's say, same-sex couples that might be getting married. She actually references a New Mexico case involving that. So that language is typical, but just as Scott points out, they didn't decide those other cases. So when those other cases, if they come before the court would be free to sort of say, we're going to extend this decision. And there are also reasons based on the way the court interpreted the doctrine of freedom of religion jurisprudence to think the court might be willing to go more broadly, because they really extended the doctrine in some interesting ways, reinterpreting some cases that had occurred 20 or 30 years ago, I think.
River to River listeners, what are your thoughts on the Supreme Court decision in the Hobby Lobby case? 1-866-780-9100. See it as a decision, as a loss of autonomy for women, or a victory for the separation of church and state? Perhaps those are a couple of views that are being thrown around out there, at least. 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you have a completely different view of this. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Back to the point about sexual orientation. I see a lot is being written and talked about it, that Justice Alito wrote that the ruling will not allow discrimination to be cloaked as religious practice. But a lot is being said the fact that he did not mention sexual orientation when he provided that assurance, did he? Mark Kendi.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, of course, the obvious one he's talking about is racial discrimination. And you know, that's sort of the easy case. And so, you know, you could interpret what he's saying as, you know, we're not going to say that this opens the door to racial discrimination. But he doesn't specifically address sexual orientation. Justice Kennedy has a concurrence that some have interpreted as being a more readable as suggesting sexual orientation would not be something that would be allowed to be the basis for religious objection. But I think even that's quite unclear, and I think that's why Justice Ginsburg specifically cites the New Mexico case in her dissent, because she's concerned.
Mm-hmm. What about these options? Part of the court's ruling was based on the fact that they said that it didn't have to be done this way, Scott Peters. There were other options?
Well, the Department of Health and Human Services, which wrote the regulations that were in question here, they exempted nonprofit religious organizations. And what has to happen there is if a nonprofit religious organization doesn't want to cover contraception, then it has to certify that it objects to this.
Okay, and then, this is written into the ACA.
Well, it's written by the Health and Human Services, which enacted the regulations to put it into place. It's okay. Part of the preventative care okay. Part of the ACA.
But this case has a for-profit company
right.
At the center of it.
So right. What the Supreme Court said was, because that less restrictive option is there for nonprofit groups,
yep.
HHS could have also allowed for-profit groups, which objected to contraception coverage on a religious basis, to use that less restrictive option. Now, that less restrictive option is itself the subject of litigation right now. There are religious organizations that are basically arguing that even by turning in a government form that says we object to this, that mere act is in and of itself an action that supports providing contraceptive care. And that act sort of makes them morally complicit in this this action that they object to. And so that is being sorted out by the courts even now. So at the same time that the Supreme Court seemed to suggest yesterday that was a viable option, the court could turn around next year and say, no, even that is not constitutional.
Okay, let's go to our phones. Janet in Rock Island, about 10 minutes or so left of our conversation on this topic. Janet in Rock Island, we're going to fire through some other views here quickly, but what is your reaction?
I am just so angry to hear five male judges making a decision that affects women, and I'm even getting angry at all the men discussing it, because it, for men, it's a theoretical issue.
Right.
For women, it's our lives. I have a friend who needs an IUD, not for pregnancy control, but to control gynecological bleeding. She actually lost half of her body's blood.
Mm-hmm.
Justice Ginsburg said the IUD, this type, costs 1 month's wages for a minimum wage worker. Now, my friend makes a little more than that, but it's going to be a hardship. I'd like to see these judges explain to my friend's daughter if she dies because of their decision.
Okay, Janet, thank you for your reaction from Rock Island. 1-866-780-9100. Talking a few more minutes about the latest U.S. Supreme Court decision in the so-called Hobby Lobby case. One thing you mentioned, Mark Kendi, at the outset, talk a little bit more about this idea that you said was really quite significant, that corporations now are not only people, and we heard that a lot in our past campaigns, but because they are people, they have religious rights?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument that's just bizarre in the sense that one can imagine a corporation doing advertising and in that sense speech, but a corporation doesn't have a soul. A corporation doesn't pray. So the idea that there are religious rights in this context is, you know, I think quite an extension. And there's also pretty much no precedent for this. So that's what I mean by saying initially that it's a very it's a very broad ruling. And if I can comment on Janet's excellent statement, one of the troubling things about the decision is Justice Ginsburg references women numerous times. Justice Alito does not reference women very often. His focus, in his opinion, is very much on the burden on the corporation. And so, you know, that's an example, I think, of, you know, particularly the majority opinion not taking, I think, as seriously as they might have, the potential burden on women, and then adding Scott's point that some of the things they say about what will protect women may not, in fact, or some of the other aspects of alternatives that the court suggests may not, in fact, be found to be constitutional later by the court. So it's a real problem.
Okay, let's go to Darren in Ankeny. Darren, not much time, but please, what's your view?
Well, Ben, I'm wondering that since the law has no means to determine the sincerity of any religious conviction, what is to keep a cynical corporation from suddenly having a road to Damascus moment and converting to a faith that does not support even this much medical support?
Wow. Okay. I guess we know how politics and the work here. That's certainly not something that we can't say won't happen. Is it, Scott Peters?
Well, Mark might be able to answer this with a little bit more specificity, but it's generally true that the courts have decided we're going to stay out of determining whose religious beliefs or which religious beliefs are correct or you know, whether religious belief is wrong or questioning the basics of a religious belief. Instead, they've decided to say if the religious belief is sincerely held. I think that the road to Damascus example might not qualify as a sincerely held belief. That is, if there was a record that this was not in fact any part of the corporate's ethos, that might not meet that test.
Mm-hmm. Mark, did you have anything to add there?
Well, I think he's right, hopefully. In other words, the court does take a very deferential approach, saying we don't want to interfere in assessing the sincerity of the belief. And the dissent says, well, okay, that's true, we shouldn't assess the sincerity, but we should be able to look at how attenuated and how, whether the belief burden on the person is attenuated to the point where we don't, want to give it credit that it is kind of going down the road to Damascus. So hopefully that will take care of the problem, but I think Justice Ginsburg is concerned about that part of the opinion.
A couple of polls to mention in relation to this case. A majority of Americans do not think that employers should have the ability to limit coverage for contraception based on religious beliefs, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll. This was released on Sunday in anticipation of this ruling. 53% disagree with giving private employers the ability to pick and choose forms of contraceptives to cover under health plans. 35% agreeing with Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood. 12% saying they didn't know. Then also a more recent poll, Gallup poll, saying only 30% of Americans have confidence in the Supreme Court. This is a record low for the judicial branch. The findings represent a 7-point drop for the Supreme Court since 2012. Now, this is the institution of the Supreme Court. Now we have sort of the Supreme Court at 30% having confidence. People have confidence, 30%. Confidence in the presidency, to compare it, 29%, and Congress way down at 6%, Scott Peters. So does this, in that context, do we see this changing that confidence or having anything to do with it?
I think there's probably two issues here. First of all, you mentioned the public opinion data regarding the agreement or disagreement with the policy itself, that is, whether employers should be able to make this choice about providing contraceptive coverage. I think we already see literally within minutes of the decision being announced, we've seen the political parties, the interest groups on different sides of these issues gearing up for an election campaign in the fall. They're already mobilizing. This is an issue, a political issue, where Democrats have a fairly big advantage, and certainly one of the key constituencies that Democrats want to mobilize and want to get to out to the polls are women, and so this plays right into their hands. The other issue you raised, though, is the sort of confidence in the court or the legitimacy of the Supreme Court. And, of course, there's no way to know how this might look like 2 years from now, 4 years from now, 6 years from now. But on the whole, the political science research into confidence in the court has shown that over time, the court has been remarkably able to withstand these kinds of ebbs and flows in terms of disagreement with particular decisions. So even a big decision like Bush versus Gore, the court recovered within a fairly small number of years, within 2 or 3 years. The court recovered in terms of overall assessment of the legitimacy of the institution.
Mark Candy, do you think the court cares about this polling, about confidence in that institution?
I think the justices probably don't focus too much on that. But there's an old saying, the court follows the election returns. So they're aware of it. But I don't think that's the basis for or influences them significantly. I think the part that may be playing a role here is, you know, you typically have splits on the court where, you know, the Republican-nominated justices go one way in certain cases and the Democrats go other. And in this case, you've got all the women on one side and the men, you know, on the other. And I think those are some of the things that may create the perception the court's a little bit political. And once it starts to be viewed as political, then that may be problematic, although I agree with Scott's assessment that it has shown pretty good resiliency over the years.
And just very briefly, I would add that the kind of increasingly polarized politics that we see in the U.S. today could very well end up having an effect on the legitimacy of the Supreme Court. I think that's entirely possible.
In what way having an effect?
I think that when you see today this polarized politics where public opinion is increasingly polarized, elites are increasingly polarized, media is increasingly polarized, and then we see votes on the Supreme Court that are regularly themselves polarized. I think it's possible that tears at the fabric that allows courts to have legitimacy, that allows people to accept a decision that goes against their own viewpoints. And that's something we'll just, you know, political scientists will just have to keep researching.
A couple minutes left. Let's go to Dan in central Iowa. Dan, quickly, your view.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I wonder if we've got a little bit of an elephant in the room situation, the way we're talking about this right now. And what I mean by that is that I was listening to a number of the news channels last night as they were reporting on this, and both of them, a liberal channel and what you might call a more conservative channel, had the attorney on there for Hobby Lobby. It seems that Hobby Lobby's issue was only with about four drugs or procedures on the Affordable Care Act list of birth control measures, you might say. Their problem was that those four were more abortive and less of a contraceptive.
Right.
And I think we've got an abortion issue here more than we've got a contraceptive issue.
Let's get a reaction to that, Dan. Thank you. Scott, do you want to react to that?
I think that's true. I think the politics of abortion play a role here, but I'll also say that the way the opinion is written, I think it applies to any part of the contraceptive mandate. And in fact, either yesterday or today, the court issued orders in existing cases that made it pretty clear that there are some cases out there where Catholic organizations are objecting to providing any contraception, and the Supreme Court's orders made it very clear that those cases are to be resolved according to the Hobby Lobby decision.
Okay. Very quickly, I have to limit you on time, please. 30 seconds, Mary. Can you give it to us in that?
I think this is a 21st century Dred Scott case. It has nothing to do with race, but Dred Scott led to the Civil War. And Scalia was always talking about originality. The founding fathers would hate this court. There's no Protestants on this court. And the founding fathers didn't like Catholics, didn't like blacks, and were indifferent about Jews. So this court is going to reap what it sows.
All right. Thank you. Nate in Cedar Rapids, very quickly from you, please.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, this is an excellent opportunity for Hobby Lobby to get some marketing information out there. You know, every time I hear about this issue, it seems like it could have been solved on more of a local level. If there's some medical need for contraception, they could have, you know, handled it. But now it's on the national level. Right. And I just find that kind of interesting how it's been very marketed.
Okay, Nate, good observation here. Let's ask for a closing comment from Scott and Mark here. Mark, very quickly, wrap it up, please. Your thoughts.
I just think it's an overly broad decision and an incorrect decision that burdens women in a way that's unfortunate, forces them to have to hope that they will be able to get coverage in circumstances that are not certain, and opens the door to lots of future litigation, and that's problematic.
Scott Peters.
I'll just reiterate that I think I'll be looking for what the court does with the litigation that's already in the pipeline, the litigation with the nonprofits and the like. I think that's when we'll start to see how this case is really going to be applied.
Okay, so instead of bringing any closure here, this raises a lot of questions, a lot of litigation we'll keep our eyes on in the future. I want to thank you to Scott Peters, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa, Mark Kendi, a Professor of Law at Drake University, James Madison Chair in Constitutional Law, and Director of Drake Constitutional Law Center. Mark, Scott, thank you both. Coming up in just a moment, we'll discuss the U.S. Patent Office decision to cancel the federal trademarks of the Washington Redskins. Yep, what's in a name? That's our discussion coming up. We'll talk with a trademark lawyer involved in the case and get the perspective of a member of the Meskwaki tribe here in Iowa. That's when River to River continues. From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer.